My Spirit Radio. Radio to open your mind, empower your body, and enrich your soul.
Psychic Cafe Coffee Break is brought to you by Psychic Cafe. www.psychiccafe.org. Psychic Cafe Coffee Break with Kim Arnold.
Welcome back from the break. My next guest is Eamon Brooks, otherwise known as Eamon the Shaman. Welcome, Eamon.
Hello. Nice to be on the programme.
Thank you for joining us. Eamon, this month we're at the Psychic Cafe. We're running, the subject is power animals. And of course, power animals do have a significance, or so I understand, with shamanism. But I'm really interested in, really, what exactly is a shaman? Could you explain to us, please?
Okay, a shaman. Well, the shaman, it's considered to be the oldest known method of healing, or practice of healing, that we have on record. It goes back thousands and thousands of years. And in these modern times, we use the word shaman, or shaman, as some people call it. It comes from the Siberian Tungus tribes dialect. And it basically means, roughly translated as best you can, I think, a worker with fire. Obviously, the fire relating to energy. So what a shaman does is works with the natural energies. He's the outside character in a village. If you go back, you know, a few thousand years, you had your social structure of the villages, and most of them had their own shaman, or certainly a shared shaman with another village, who would always be a little bit separate, because he was the person who, if you like, had a wider perspective on things. He didn't only see the physical world, like most ordinary people. He could see the other worlds. Yeah. And so he was used as an intermediary between the men and the gods. If you like, he was the healer, he was the seer, you know, if they went to him for advice. The old terms we used to use before we picked up using shaman was things like witch doctor and medicine man.
Yes, yes. So what drew you to become a shaman? I mean, was it something you was always interested in? Or, you know, I'm always fascinated as to why people become something. So what drew you in to become a shaman?
I didn't have much choice in it, really. I come from a long line of healers.
Right.
Which was on my mother's side, funnily enough. It's always passed down up to me through the female side of the family.
Right.
But because my mother, who was the, you know, previous one in line, only had two boys,
yeah,
that had to change, and it came out in me.
Right.
So I think in some ways, shamans are born rather than made in some ways. But that doesn't mean to say you can't be made one. A lot of people have the ability but don't know it.
Yeah.
It's like, I look at what a shaman does. It's a bit of it's a talent, right? Mm. Everybody can sing, but not everybody's going to be Pavarotti. And everybody's got some abilities of the shaman, or shaman, whichever way you want to pronounce it, within them.
Right. So, as a modern-day shaman, what is your role now? What do you do as a 21st-century shaman?
Well, it's gone over from the old days when it was just the healing and the seeing bit, in some ways. We look at, because modern man is much more aware of his environment. Things have changed a little bit. You wouldn't use a shaman now to try and pacify the mountain god sort of thing if the volcano was going to blow. Okay, because we know a lot more about the science. But essentially, we're still doing the same things, the so-called modern urban shaman, if
yeah,
you like, because we're still healing people and we're still giving people advice, you know, on how to, if you like, conduct their lives for,
yeah,
for the better. I mean, my particular direction has gone through healing and also helping people to realise their full potential.
Right. So, with last year on our annual picnic, the Psychic Cafe picnic, when we went to Trosley, you came along, Eamon, and you took us on a meditation, which I still talk about now, because as someone that's really on the spiritual path, the meditation that I'm used to doing is when we go up and we connect with the heavens and we connect with the hierarchy. What I found really fascinating about your meditation is that you dropped us down through the earth. And I can remember how powerful that meditation is. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the difference here is that most people in this modern age are brought up in very much the Western tradition, the Western way of thinking. And it's all based, it's very, as we say in the business, if you like, it's very cranial.
Yeah.
It's all about thought. So everybody's taught to, if you astral project, you go upwards and outwards from your body. You're divorcing yourself from who you are, in a way. The shaman, he works in a different way, in that because our whole concept is about the totality of nature, the holistic whole, we go the other way. We go down into the earth, because the earth is our creator in a lot of ways, you know, physically. It is part of us. It is like the mother. And so what we do, when we do a meditation, we like to go down within to nature itself. And rather than divorce ourselves into some sort of abstract world, we try and stay, if you like, in what we consider to be a sort of real world. And so we go down into the earth to start our journeys. I mean, it's essentially the same thing in many ways. It's just that what you get out of it, you're a lot more tied into the energy of the earth. As you're down there traveling through the earth, if you like, the energy is much more stronger than if you go to some abstract level where the energy is a lot more refined.
It's interesting the comments that you made there, because I must say that I had a misconception about the shamanic meditations, about going down into the earth, that there was something a little bit dark about it, and yet it wasn't like that at all. In fact, I did find it probably one of the most powerful meditations that I had ever done. But I don't know if I would be brave enough to lead a meditation like that and take people down rather than up, but it's just the way that my mind is set and the way that I've been taught meditation, you know, through the years. Tell us about the animal implications with shamanism.
Right. Wherever you go in the world where there's a shaman, there's a power animal, basically. He's one of the power animal is one of the mainstay tools of a shaman, and whether it's an urban shaman in modern-day cities, or if you go to the outback in Australia with the Aboriginal shamans, or North America, we have a lot of things in common. Our symbolism's different, our language is different, but the way we work is almost identical, spread around the globe. And when we were healing somebody, we need sources of energy. We need to be able to build people's energy up, rearrange people's energy. And we use power animals for this. It's one more facet of nature, if you like. Nature includes everything, every living thing, and we can use all these living things like people would use a crystal for energy. We can use a power animal.
Right.
Now, the whole thing about the power animal, you're not talking about an animal. You were talking about the animal. Popular ones are things that have like bears and animals like that, and because there's a lot of influence these days on North American traditions where they had coyotes and bears and things like that. But when you're in touch with a power animal, what you are doing, you are in touch with the group soul of that species of animal, if you like, and you are drawing its strength. Every animal's got a particular strength, a particular characteristic that you can use. If you want somebody to build up energy in somebody, you could quite easily go to something like a bear or a cow or a rhinoceros even, you know, depending on your local sort of symbolism and traditions, because you are drawing the strength from that animal, if you like, from the group soul of that animal to give you help.
Right. So basically then, if you had a question in your life or a crisis in your life, would you just sit quietly and then just call an animal to you and see what turns up?
Oh, yes. I mean, everybody's got power animals. Most people just don't know it. I had a friend some years ago, and when I first went into her house, I noticed that everything in her house was about owls. She had little pictures of owls hanging on the wall. She had little plastic owls on the mantelpiece, and she didn't know anything about shamanism. Didn't even, probably to this day, still probably doesn't know what one is. But everything in her house was about owls. Now, an owl was her power animal, but she didn't know it. We all have these power animals. They come and go throughout our lives, you know. The difference with the shaman is that he collects them. He specifically goes out to find them and to use them, depending on what sort of work he does. And a power animal is not always what you expect. When I was first training many years ago, I did this exercise to get my first proper power animal, you know, one that I could identify with or find out what was there. And it's a thing called dancing your animal was the method I used. And you go into this sort of free-form dance, a bit of drumming or music in the background, however you want to do it. Free-form dance, and you're calling your power animal to you while you're doing it. And close your eyes, and you're swaying or whatever there. And then after a while, you'll feel the animal come to you. And you open your eyes, and you'll find yourself shadow dancing the animal. And what you do is reach out and grab it. In my case, because I went in, I was influenced the same as everybody else at the time, expecting something like a wolf, you know, everybody wants the wolf or the bear, you know. Yeah, not really traditional in our stage, though.
Yeah.
But I opened my eyes. The animal was there, and I could feel it really strongly in front of me. I opened my eyes, and it was a snake.
Oh.
It's this big cobra just staring at me, you know, shadow dancing me. And I thought, oh, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. And I sort of embraced it and, you know, brought it to me. And that power animal was still with me. And the thing about it is, my main thing with what I do is healing people. And now the power of the snake is extremely strong. It is a very primeval force. Its energy is very primeval. And it's excellent for when you're healing people, because you need sometimes to give a lot of power to a person to get them over an illness.
Right. So someone like me, Eamon, I mean, I actually have a fear of animals, which is like, and that's a childhood fear from being attacked by a dog and then, you know, kicked by a horse and all these sorts. And I'm extremely nervous of animals. And I wonder now if that has an influence on your power animal. Having that fear, it stops you maybe from calling the animal that is right for you at that time.
Oh, absolutely. Because you're fearing a part of yourself. To the shaman, looking at the holistic universe, the animal is equally a part of the universe as we are. So you are, once again, sort of blocking a natural energy, a natural side to yourself, out there.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to work on that one, I think, definitely.
You get the animal you need at the time in your life, to be honest.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if anybody wants to try getting their animal, well, go into a meditation state. It doesn't necessarily have to be a shamanic type one. But call your animal. Just call it to you. Relax, call it to you, and just see what happens. Let it come to you. It won't harm you. Because it's a very vital force, a very vital life force, and you get the animal you need. I had a friend, a lady I knew, or still do know actually, this was about 20 years or so ago, and she was suffering from chronic angina, not very well at all, and she came down to see me, and we thought, okay, we'll give you some healing, we'll take you on a journey, shamanic journey, and we'll see if we can get a power animal for you while we're there. And she went off on this journey, we took her down on this journey, and she came back with a pig. That's the last thing anybody thinks about as a power animal. But while she was down there, this little pig came up to her and started licking her face. And so she grabbed it, as I told her to, and brought it back. And within 3 months of that, her angina was almost gone.
Wow.
It was incredible. And since then, she was about 40 years old at the time. Since then, she'd moved to America, she moved to Australia, moved to New Zealand and got married. And, you know, her whole life totally changed.
So a power animal, does it talk to you? Is it like a clairvoyant vibration? This is what you pick up. Or is it how you perceive the energy of the animal? So, for example, if I saw a tiger, I would see agility and strength. If I saw an owl, I would see flight and
wisdom.
Freedom.
Yeah, wisdom, understanding.
Yeah.
In there as well. Yes, but the whole thing with the power animal, it's not just getting your animal. When you've got it, you've got to keep it and use it.
Yeah.
You treat it like a pet, in a way. You exercise it. Because the more you bond with it, the more you exercise it, the stronger it gets and the stronger you're linked to that type of energy.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, you know, with mine, it's funny, I got a spontaneous one a few years back, which is a fish, which, you know, one thing I didn't really expect, came to me very dramatically. And it's quite funny because shortly after that, without thinking about it, I took up scuba diving and everything, you know. And I used to love it. I was brilliant underwater. I used to love it. I was really at home there. And it's probably because this, you know, the power animal, one of them with me at the time, was a fish one.
Brilliant. Well, the only physical animal I have in my house is a tortoise, Mr. Biggles, so I'm not quite sure the significance of that.
Longevity.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's good. We like that one. As long as it's healthy, that's fine.
But you'll never get a bad animal for you, really, because you'll only draw what needs to help you. If you go on a journey, shamanic journey, the animal will come to you, basically, that you need, and you bring it back, and it will be helpful.
That's wonderful. Eamon, thank you so much. You've been a brilliant guest. I could chat to you for hours. But we are going to see you on the 5th of August when we have our annual Psychic Cafe picnic at the Lost Village of Dode. It looks absolutely brilliant. I had a look at it on the internet, on a very powerful ley line, and I'm sure that, as last year, you'll take us through another shamanic journey through the village there, which would be wonderful.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, so it's the 5th of August, the Lost Village of Dode, and people can get the information from Psychic Cafe website. Eamon, how can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Fine, you just go onto the web, really, is the easiest way. At Eamon Brooks, no E in the Brooks, it's eamonbrooks.org.uk.
Brilliant. Eamon, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be back in a moment.
Psychic Cafe Coffee Break is brought to you by Psychic Cafe, www.psychiccafe.org. You're listening to MySpiritRadio.com. Your work is to discover your world and then with all your heart give yourself to it. Buddha.
Have you ever wanted to know more about angels? Would you like to have a chance to receive guidance from your guardian angels? I'm Mermandy Gabler, and on my show, Angelic Bliss, I talk to guests about the angels and other beings. Listeners will have the chance to learn how to connect with their guardian angels and find out more about interesting topics such as the psychic children, fairies, and ascended masters. Each show, callers receive guidance from their angels, and I choose an oracle card for all of the listeners. You'll learn how to connect with the angels and other light beings. So join me on Angelic Bliss, where the angels can make your spirit soar.